So this past Friday, October 4th, was the feast of St. Francis. St. Francis, as many of you may know, is the patron saint of animals, and had an amazing, very fascinating life in general. And so around this time, a lot of churches, like Grace St. Paul's this weekend, will do an animal blessing service. And there can be verbal blessings, water involved, that sort of thing. So it's partly why we're invited today. For those who have or have had or have loved a pet or any species, you know the actual truth, which is that they bless us. They adopt us. So next October, once I'm a little bit more in the rhythm and flow, I hope to have a blessing here at Rincon. We'll see about getting our 300 pounds of Great Danes up on the pulpit. I'll bring them to the office one of these days. I didn't grow up with pets. My dad set up a fish tank on one of his birthdays when I was in elementary school. And my sister got a cockatiel for her birthday when I was in high school, but that was it. My brother is allergic to all non-human mammals, among many other things. So there were times growing up where I resented it for sure and even made him feel bad we couldn't get a dog. I know, can you imagine the cruelty? When I learned about supposedly hypoallergenic dogs, there was a full court press for a while that one of those might work, but no dice. It didn't take long for the dog bug to find me fully and finally shortly after college. I had been working for over a year as a grassroots organizer in Texas with a focus on mobilizing people of faith and conscience to push their members of Congress to invest bold new funding and policies around global AIDS and poverty. So now listen, we're talking about religion, AIDS, politics in Texas. I had never been there before I moved for this job, but I was hungry. I'm this eager beaver, former English major in my early 20s, passionate about what Bono from U2 is doing. The job did come with free U2 concerts. And wanting to prove I can do this with a job that doesn't always have clear clock-in, clock-out boundaries. I mean, there's always something more that could be done. And Congress is a goat rodeo on a good day, right? So how am I supposed to find balance? Okay, so I wasn't exactly thinking about it like that when I found my way to Town Lake Animal Shelter in Austin. The truth is, my entire career has been jobs like this, where in the face of enormous injustice or people's pastoral needs, it can be that much harder to call it a day. And it's a calling and an unfortunate side effect of my God-given personality as well. Fortunate on a good day. But of course, the flip side is that there's real risk of burnout and collapse, and I know that now. I've done the work to create and mend boundaries. I've also been wound up by the adrenaline and trauma in the work to the point of collapse in the past. What has saved me from worse was that dog. I'm not going to lie, adopting an energetic 11-month-old Labrador Retriever wasn't exactly an automatic Vitamix protein super balanced life milkshake for a 24 or 25-year-old. I was completely new to this. It was overwhelming at times in those early days. Oh, and what did I name him? Well, I've been told a good dog name had long vowels and hard consonants, you know, that they could hear, and was connected to something personally meaningful. Well, I love the Lord of the Rings and the world of Middle Earth, so Frodo it was, which was great, except for how he perked up or how perked up he got when the movies would be on. Or how perked up other people got when you're at the dog park yelling, "Frodo, over here!" And people are like, "Look at this guy." Nerd alert. Long story short, I soon learned, as I'm sure many of you have, that when dogs choose us, they require us to take Sabbath moments for ourselves that we wouldn't otherwise take. And the data has since come thick and fast to back this realization up. Now, what do I mean by Sabbath moments? I mean brain breath, soul breath, choosing to rest and leaning into it. Dogs, in their companionship and comfort, require walks, getting outside, feeding, and more. Having one means necessary pauses and the de-stressing that comes to any of us when we get outdoors, that health and wholeness. So when the challenges of seeking justice through Congress seemed insurmountable, I still had to walk Frodo regularly. Reorientation and relaxation came automatically. Recentering and balance. Looking at the whole picture and story, just stepping back. And realizing he'd love me no matter how successful I was that day or not. Now, of course, you don't need a dog to be recentered and balanced. But I mean... But we do need a posture of recognition that we are in process, that we can't hold it all, and that choosing to do that honestly is going to be the only way forward if we want to make progress personally and professionally. For example, as many of you know, my partner, Tracy, was a full-time touring artist for a decade, which I guess makes me groupie number one. We met at one of her concerts. Y'all have heard that joke before. I know I've said it to some. Knowing my own challenges taking care of myself before I better learned the past couple of years, she told me something once that stuck with me ever since. She realized that after weeks on the road, she would go crazy wondering why she never felt rested after a stopover back home. And then she realized rest is different from recovery. When we've been pushing hard on for the world and for others, we can't just manufacture Sabbath. We have to get our body and mind and spirit right. Sabbath is a verb, funny enough. And when life is hard, when we've been giving it our all or had a bad hand dealt our way, we have to recover before we can rest. This is why so many of us, myself very much included, can put so much stock in time off or a day off and just end up being catatonic and feel like doing nothing and go back to our vocation or daily grind feeling no different. Like, I was supposed to get rest. This is my time. That's because Sabbath, rest, is a verb. We need to be balanced to experience it. And if we're running near empty, we need to get some gas in the tank to truly be at one with God, with creation, with each other, and with ourselves. We must honestly take stock of feeling like we have nothing left to give so that we can truly be ready to receive what God has to give us in our Sabbath moments. If a dog, or a child for that matter, is seen as one more thing to take care of, as a burden as opposed to an outlet for joy and health, then going on that walk is going to be a drain, not a buoy. That's what I mean about the posture. Are the things in our lives giving us that balance to really fill up? So the same goes for loss and grieving. We must account what we've lost, honestly name and claim our sadness, our traumas, our heartache, before we can grieve. Like Sabbath, to grieve is a verb. We don't choose to sad. I'm sadding right now. It's a thing that rests in us. To be sad, to be hurt, to be ruptured by trauma, these things drain us. We must name and claim them honestly. Often, due to the nature of the wound, we need help and solidarity and understanding and counseling and therapy to do so. We need community, but we need to engage those things before we can grieve. Grieving is the process by which we push our honest experiences forward into growth. Grieving, like Sabbath, is a verb that can only be chosen, accepted, and leaned into when we're ready, when we've prepared ourselves honestly. Everyone gets sad because life has sadness in it. Grieving is moving through that. Exhaustion and overcommitment comes to us all, and likewise sadness and loss come to us all. But to Sabbath and to grieve, respectively, come to those who prepare for them. And I want to say that both are required for true balance, life, and hope. I want to say that I grieve. After 15 years of life and 14 years together, side by side, a week and a half ago, the day we all know but never think will come came to us in the middle of the night, the realization that we had to say goodbye to Frodo. And I was a wreck that day. I'm not sure I've had time to process it since, though since losing him was like having a part of me cut off. The phantom limb of his spirit is still very much with me, even in the busyness and commitments of every day since. But I want to say I was prepared. Before our last goodbye at the vet, when I knew that this was it, I was able to take time to put on several episodes of Friday Night Lights. Remember, he's from Texas, and that amazing show is like comfort food. We ordered In-N-Out burgers, and we treated ourselves. He was able to eat his. It was the only thing he was able to eat that day. I wasn't sad, but I did grieve. I cried out. I shook with woe and mourning. And for the better part of a year, I knew his days were much shorter than they were longer. This was it. How do I say goodbye to my mainest man? By loving on him in that moment and living forward in every moment since, honestly holding and naming everything he gave me through multiple and seismic seasons of life. Grieving is a verb. It's a choice. It's a process. It can be healthy or not. In order for it to be healthy, you guessed it, it has to be honest, grounded in openness. # Rincon mission statement. And now I'm not saying the grieving over a pet is in the same ballpark as the process of coming to terms with being exiled as an entire people group from one's home, not at all. But what we see in the psalm today is that commitment to honesty that we're talking about when we talk about true and deep and lasting loss, any loss. It is raw and it is honest. It is writing these things down. And that's because, grounded in openness, the psalmist knows God can take this angry, vengeful, brokenhearted lament. This psalm holds pain. It can hold yours too, because God can hold it, wants to hold it, wants you to be real. There is weeping. I think of the haunting rendition of song in the musical Godspell that takes several lines from this psalm. There is grief and acceptance of that grief. But that song definitely doesn't have the last lines we read here today. The psalmist cries out for basically an eye for an eye, most brutal revenge possible. The smashing of the Babylonian toddlers against the rocks. Sorry, I should have said earmuffs for the kids. And this is our holy scripture, just as potent as Jesus' words in Luke these past several weeks. But you know what? If we're being honest with ourselves, this is honesty itself. This is how we feel when the world is turned upside down, when we've been desperately wronged or think we have, and want fairness, balance, and justice. And here's the thing, God wants that honesty, because the living God lives for fairness, balance, and justice, just a different way. But we won't know what that is unless we get real about what we want, own up to it. Get into the process and the conversation with the living God is the only way to get the purposes and passions of the living God. The psalmist is going through the process and stages of grief with every verb and emotion possible. It's raw and real. That's how we feel, right? The thing is, when we don't give ourselves over to honest grieving, to walking through our pain postured towards healing with others and with the help of others and God, that pain turns rotten and wants to inflict pain on others. It goes against the pain and passions of God instead of giving God space to empathize with them. And God empathizes with our pain and loss more than anything. God gets it. Jesus gets it and gets you because Jesus lived it. When Jesus' friend Lazarus died, does he lash out? Does he jump right to a miracle to paper over his feelings and say, everything's fine? Does he find a new parable or ministry to gloss over the trauma of the loss and distract everyone from the healing they need? Nope. Jesus' reaction is active grieving. And it's so potent it gets its own Bible verse, even though it's the shortest sentence in the Bible. Jesus wept. Period. Jesus grieved. Jesus processes the loss, feels it, names it, claims it, grieves and weeps with Lazarus' sisters and friends. It sucks. It's hard. But he doesn't say, and we've all heard this and maybe said it ourselves to others before, God's got it. Or everything happens for a reason. Or blame others for the loss. He holds it because he feels it. And then he shows how a new life is possible when grief gets its normal, natural, necessary due. Shows what's possible through the life-giving way of Jesus. Lazarus, come out. Those of you who have lost loved ones, be they pets, friends, family, all of the above, you know. Please take the time you need to grieve and invite those into your life who are safe space for allowing it. Loss can also mean pastors and ministry efforts. And many here at Rincon are sad about those things. I've heard and sat with many of you about them. But I'm not sure, by and large, that those things have collectively been grieved in the most proactive and healthy ways by some. Pain, and it's a very natural reaction, can be bottled up and evidenced by lashing out, distrust, avoidance, gossip. If we are truly committed to new directions in ministry, then that means going back to interim task number one, coming to terms with history. All five go together. And that means healthy, honest grieving for pain and loss and sadness and trauma over the past year. It means taking our pain and loss to safe places to reckon with it honestly, and where we're nurturing resentments or misinformation over those losses, getting on the straight and true track, or finding space to forgive and let go. Please know your why for being here still. I want you here. Your neighbors in the pews want you here. We all want to trust and be held, and be known, and be loved. It's what we're created for, especially when we grieve. So if this community is meant to live and grow forward, let's make sure whatever gaps exist between our need to be held and our need to grieve are closed. Then we'll see the blessing of what we've lived through for what it is, growth. And I don't say that to be Pollyanna, or to blow artificial sunshine at you. I say it in the way we read that God hears our grief, as an expression and opportunity to be fully alive and human, and therefore liberated by acknowledging that what we've been through and what the church has been through will be stronger for it. So let's commit to that together. And as for Frodo, well, as Tolkien wrote, I believe my boy, like all those who have lost or moved on, is loved through to that other side as well. And even though I grieve, I am at peace. For as we read in the Fellowship of the Ring, after surviving a spiritually poisonous gash at the hands of the Witch King of Angmar on Weathertop, we hear Frodo made it to Rivendell. Quote, Frodo was now safe in the last homely house east of the sea. That house was, as Bilbo had long ago reported, a perfect house, whether you like food or sleep or storytelling or singing or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. Merely to be there was a cure for weariness, fear, and sadness. Does Rincon feel like Rivendell to you this year? This day? If yes, wonderful. And if not, Let's commit to honestly grieve through why not, individually and collectively. Rincon UCC can be Rivendell for you, for each other, for our entire community. New directions await. God is already committed. Amen.